Our first guest says New Zealanders don't realise how unlucky they are. Executive Director of the New Zealand Initiative, Dr. Oliver Hartwich, has written a piece for the Herald this week, the New Zealand Herald, about his frustrations, and it's already ruffled a few feathers. He joins me now in the Wellington studio. Hi there, Oliver.
Hello, good afternoon.
What inspired you to write this piece?
Oh, some pent-up frustration. I've been here for 8 years, and though this country is lovely and wonderful and has really friendly people, there are a few things that still annoy me, and annoy me the longer I am here. And I mentioned that in the piece. My main frustration at the moment is housing. The other big frustration I have is education. And on top of all of that, I think we are unable to have a proper conversation about these issues.
Mm. You would be hard-pressed to find a New Zealander who doesn't acknowledge and worry too about the housing crisis, right?
That is true. At the same time, what I find frustrating is that there are too many people making excuses about the housing market. It starts with the language. So when house prices go up, people say the housing market is doing well. And I find this ironic because in most other walks of life, when prices go up, we call this inflation. In the housing market, when prices go up and really go beyond the reach of ordinary people, we think that there is something good about the housing market and people feel richer about themselves. And no politician really dares to spell out that house prices actually should fall to make New Zealand a better place. We have actually built a cult around house prices. Not unusual, of course. You can see this in the UK and Australia as well, but I think it's really unhelpful and unhealthy for a country.
Agreed. This is a problem of Western capitalist democracy, isn't it? If you've got a house, and presumably there aren't anyone who doesn't own a house who's celebrating when prices go up, but if you've got a house and you're making money pretty easily, it's natural and, in fact, it's encouraged by the system for you to be pleased and,
and to
vote for the sort of policies that are going to promote that.
It depends. I don't think it's a Western capitalist phenomenon because there are at least two countries that I know where house prices have basically gone up in line with normal inflation since the 1970s. And the countries I have in mind are Germany and Switzerland. With the exception of the last few years when interest rates really plunged to zero or negative in Germany and Switzerland, house prices in both countries really haven't really changed much. You can still buy a house by and large for the same price in real money you would have paid in 1970. Whereas New Zealand, of course, is a completely different story. Our house prices are now beyond good and evil. They've become so expensive, and then you just have to look what you buy with that money. I mean, you get stuff that is hardly insulated, hardly architecturally designed, and it is just ridiculous. It doesn't have to be that way. Not in a country the size, the geographical size of Italy, with less than a tenth of the population of Italy. So if only we built a bit more, we wouldn't have that problem. We shouldn't have to pay two-thirds or three-quarters of the price of a typical family home in Auckland for the land. If there's one thing that New Zealand has in abundance, it's land. It is a completely self-inflicted problem that we have, and it goes back at least 30, 40 years. This is not a party political thing, I'm saying. This has happened under every government, no matter who was in government. We really need to sort this out.
Yes, and as you say, I mean, it's also happened in other countries, similar countries like Canada and Australia and the UK. But if we accept that Germany and Switzerland, which are the outliers here really in this system, that things are better off there, what sorts of policies or what sorts of things do they do differently and, you know, might they be appealing to the New Zealand voter?
Well, I've done a lot of research on housing markets. I'm starting with my first job I had in the UK in 2005 in Think Tank Land. The basic difference really between the English-speaking countries you mentioned and Germany and Switzerland is that in Germany and Switzerland you have a lot more devolution. So councils going for development, they can keep some of the taxes generated from it. What happens in New Zealand, of course, we have a very centralized country. When a council goes for development, the council has to pay for the roads, the council has to pay for the water connections. So that is really costly to develop this kind of infrastructure for new housing development. But all the taxes generated out of the development, all the income taxes, the corporate taxes, the GST, they go to central government in Wellington. So you have one tier of government that pays for all the development when it happens and the other one that gets all the revenue out of it. And then we're surprised that these tiers don't talk to each other and that we've got a problem in delivering our housing supply. In Germany and Switzerland, it works differently. In Switzerland, for example, you have local taxes for the council and for the canton. In fact, the federal government in Switzerland only gets about 20% of all income taxes. And so you've got a completely different dynamic, and councils built because it's good for them. And so in that way, they have delivered superb infrastructure. They've kept house prices stable. And they've taken the local population along with them when it comes to development, because there's always something in it for them.
Sounds pretty good. Did you see any policies in the recent election that mirrored these or learnt from these countries that, you know, New Zealand would do well to imitate?
Of course not. We're talking about all sorts of demand tinkering issues, whether we have loan-to-value ratios, whether we have maybe some subsidies for first-time buyers. That is as far as we go in our policy discussions, and it is frustrating because there is no shortage of research. We've done this actually at the initiative, but other organizations have done the same too. There is no lack of understanding what's wrong in the housing market. There is a lack of political will to tackle it, probably because politicians simply don't want to have to explain to the population that house prices should actually fall to make it more sustainable.
So who do you blame, Oliver?
I think we're lacking some national conversations. We're glossing over our problems. We're only tinkering with stuff.
Agreed. But you're frustrated. So who are you frustrated with?
I am frustrated with our political class. I'll give you another example. Take congestion. I mean, for 30, 40 years, there are reports now, have been reports from politicians of all parties saying that congestion charging is the way forward, we have to make better use of our roads, we have to manage traffic intelligently. And you can find statements from politicians of every single party in parliament supporting this in opposition. The moment they enter government, they are always kind of shying away from it because they don't want to upset anyone. So you have lots of great discussions with opposition politicians. The moment they enter government, they are so timid and afraid of their own courage, will never get the reforms the country really needs.
Yeah, and to be fair to them, it's probably because they know that they'll be voted out. You look at a small version, I mean, a capital gains tax wouldn't have been revolutionary, but man, oh man, that made a big stink, didn't it, when they were even talking about doing it, and it was abandoned before it even got to the voters to decide on in its most recent incarnation. So, you know, when you're talking about the sort of systemic, paradigmatic shifts that you're suggesting here, isn't it the voters that you have to lay the blame on?
The voters, perhaps the media as well, because I think we should be talking more about actual policy and not about the sideshows that typically dominate our election campaigns.
Again, they're selling their stories to the people buying the papers and watching TV, right? They're serving the people who are casting the votes.
Yeah, but New Zealanders are not dumb. I think it is possible to have an intelligent conversation with ordinary people in New Zealand. That shouldn't stop the media from reporting on policies.
They might not be dumb, but they might be selfish, right? Is that the problem here, that people vote in their self-interest rather than the interests of their country or even closer to them, their children or grandchildren?
It is understandable to be voting in your self-interest, but at least you should be informed. I think on top of all of that, there is another problem. And the problem is actually that sometimes we even do not even want to have a debate. We don't want to admit that we've got problems. And I'll give you another example. That's the education example from my column this week. So we have actually documented the failings in our education system. And we are, again, not the first to point that out. The Tertiary Education Commission 4 years ago demonstrated that 40% of school leavers are functionally illiterate and innumerate. That's a government agency coming to that conclusion, which is pretty damning after 12 years of schooling. And so when we pointed that out, when the OECD points it out that we have a problem with our education results because our PISA scores are going down, we are very good at glossing over all of this. We're finding excuses. We say, okay, maybe our students don't learn that much anymore, but hey, by God, they're creative these days and they've got problem-solving skills and they're so empathetic and they're kind. And yet the purpose of an education system is to educate, and we are glossing over. And I could give you one example. When we published our last education report, we got a lot of feedback from teachers, from principals, from parents, saying, finally, thank God, someone is speaking out, someone is actually putting this on the agenda, but please don't ever quote my name in any of your reports. So we've got, you wouldn't believe how many feedback emails and letters we got from teachers who never want to be mentioned anywhere near this, but who tell us that they completely agree with the analysis. So we have got a tendency not to speak out, to gloss over our problems, and that unfortunately prevents the debates that this country desperately needs.
Who glosses over? Who says there's no problem with our education system when they get and see results like that?
Well, I can give you a practical example. It's the Principals Federation. So we did an opinion survey last year. We wanted to find out about the state of general knowledge in New Zealand. So we asked 1,000 representative New Zealanders some really basic questions about geography, history, and so on. One of the questions was, can you name the 7 continents? Well, as it turned out, just over half of New Zealanders could. And then the Principals Federation's chair at the time was asked, is that a problem? And the answer was telling. He said, well, actually, it's not a problem because not everybody has to know the continents. And if I'm teaching in a small rural community, say in Bluff, and my kids are not interested in the continents, but they really like mutton birds, well, I should be teaching them mutton birds. And I think this is just ridiculous. An abdication of responsibility of our education professionals who really should be teaching every child in the country the basics in geography and history. It's not enough to say, oh, but the kids don't want to hear that. I think we've got a responsibility to train the young generation to make sure they have the basic knowledge to really work, live and prosper in the 21st century. And it's not good enough to just say, but they had a good time at school.
Yeah. When you say that we're not good at having debates about these things, is there any evidence that other countries are better at it?
I can't give you hard evidence. I can't give you a figure for that. But what I can tell you is that I've now lived in 4 different countries. I still read my newspapers from Germany, from the UK, from Australia, and I read publications in New Zealand. My impression, and it's perhaps a superficial impression, it's anecdotal, is that other countries have way better debates. I find the more interesting essay pieces and opinion pieces in international newspapers. I think we have a very shallow debate in New Zealand. I wish we had a wider, broader, more diverse and more in-depth media scene. It's good we've got programs like this one, but I think there needs to be more of that.
We talk about the tall poppy syndrome in New Zealand, the tendency to cut down people when they stick out or when they stick their head up. But this seems to be a different sort of problem. You're suggesting that we don't like people to call attention to our faults and we don't like to work constructively on areas in which the country might be better. We prefer the view of New Zealand as paradise.
Well, look, my personal impression is just that it's difficult to discuss politics in New Zealand. And it's different, perhaps my cultural background. I come from Germany. We love talking politics. I mean, we've been educated in civics, especially after the experience of National Socialism. That should never happen again. So the German state and German government really made sure that people had a proper education about history, about politics at school, because we didn't want to have a repeat of that national disaster and crisis and catastrophe. In New Zealand, my impression is we don't really like having these discussions about politics. You know, if I wanted to caricature it a bit, the idea of a good German evening is to empty 3 bottles of red wine and solve the problems of the Middle East. In New Zealand, my impression is that the only topics you can safely discuss at dinner parties are rugby and the weather.
Mm. Yeah, maybe fishing.
Fishing, yeah.
Oliver, how has it gone down? A man originally from Germany telling New Zealanders what's wrong with their country.
Well, as you would expect. I mean, some people say finally someone is talking about it and the other people want to give me a one-way ticket back to Germany. The problem is actually, as I say in the piece, I don't want New Zealand to be any other country. I want New Zealand to be New Zealand. There's a reason why I'm here, because I love the place. Wonderful landscape, lovely people, friendly people. There are so many things going for New Zealand. But what frustrates me is that this country could be doing so much better on housing, on transport, on education, on other issues. And I wish we had the courage to have these open debates, because I think the country needs them.
How do you teach a country to get the courage?
I think the only way to teach the courage is to have the courage yourself and stick your head out. And even if they want to crucify you afterwards, at least you triggered a debate, and that's my job. And you know what? I'm not doing it for myself. I've got a good job. I lead a good life, a very comfortable life, but I want everyone in New Zealand to have the same opportunities.
Has it got nasty this week, the feedback to your essay?
Oh, the usual stuff on Twitter that you would expect, but I don't take it too seriously. I've actually received really nice positive feedback as well, constructive feedback, people saying actually we really should have more such discussions in public, and it would actually help the country to get to better results. And by the way, I think there is a chance now to perhaps translate some of this into politics. I mean, both parties have said before the election that our electoral cycles are too short. I completely agree. Maybe we could have a calmer debate if we moved from 3 to 4-year terms, maybe even 5-year terms, because I think this constant short-termism in politics, you know, always looking to the next election date, prevents us from actually doing the reforms that the country needs.
Appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
It's Executive Director of the New Zealand Initiative, a think tank, Dr. Oliver Hartwich, talking about his frustrations with New Zealand, despite enjoying living here and wanting to become a New Zealander, which he points out at the beginning of his piece.